You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 25 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you recorded and loud from my apartment in Bloemfontein, Johannesburg. On the show today, Mia Kruger, the Growth Point update, offices still under pressure. Chatting with Justin Schmidt from Absa on a better than expected manufacturing confidence. And then we're talking with SA Murder Mysteries, but we're actually talking about why this is the time for South Africans to take over the world. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb, civil construction confidence slumps 38% in the second quarter. Percentage of companies that find construction demand to be elusive remains elevated. I would have expected a much better number from that in terms of construction. I appreciate civils, but still, I thought we would be seeing more happening. Certainly, we hear a bunch from the likes of Rabex and Afrimat. Business Day, Growthpoint's diverse investment base sees it through COVID storm. It's got its debt levels better, but offices remain a problem. We'll delve into that with Mia Kruger. US markets overnight were green. In fact, everything's green almost. S&P up 0.6, NASDAQ up 0.7. Asia is green, Sydney up 0.7, and Tokyo 0.8% higher. Commodities green overnight, gold $1,778 an ounce. The Rand a little stronger, 1418. And top 40 looking for a green opening, about 200 points up. What's that? About a third of a percent.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Mia Kruger, Director of Kruger International. Mia, morning. Appreciate the early morning time. Growthpoint update coming to the market yesterday. It's 9 months ending March. So it's from June. It's got all the end of June. It's got all, you know, the sort of lockdowns to a degree. I mean, this was, for a long time, our bluest of blue chip REITs. What did you take on the update? My sense was a bit of good, a bit of not so good.
Yes, absolutely. Good morning, Simon. I agree with you. That's the same take I had when I looked at the statement. The nice thing to see is, you know, the fact that something that we both of us focus on is that diversification seems to be one of your best bets in any portfolio, and it's the same thing for Growthpoint. That really helped them. The fact that they weren't only exposed to the South African market, but they're exposed to the UK market and to the Australian market, where vaccine rollouts have been happening much faster than here to one extent, and they're exposed to quite a bit of retail assets. And then also the fact that they've had such a broad portfolio locally has also helped them. The main thing is that one of their key assets is the waterfront in Cape Town, the V&A waterfront, which they own 50% of. And the footfall there is just not what it was. Without the global travelers or the foreign travelers is coming to South Africa, that complex sees a massive hit. We look at the numbers, and it looks like footfall has been earlier this year, March, it's still been 50% less than it was in March 2020. And that's a massive number. That means that half the people are actually going to a big mall that has a lot of outside space, like the V&A waterfront. And those are the people that spend the money.
Yeah.
So the good thing that I did like was the fact, that they said that they will be distributing some of the income in a dividend. They've actually adjusted their payout ratio to about 80%, and that's been part of the fact that they're focusing hard to reduce their debt, to reduce their loan to value stress levels, and they're shoring up that balance sheet. So they've actually been able to retain some earnings in last year and this year, and that's already about 1.4 billion rand. They raised some capital in November last year, and they also retained or reinvested with a reinvestment plan about 600 million last year. So all in all, they had about 6.4 billion that they managed to retain and put back into their balance sheets and to reduce those loan to value numbers. So yes, I think, you know, for a big company like Growthpoint that you say has been one of our main REITs in South Africa, everyone probably has a bit of exposure to that if you invested in the local market through some or another way, then I think this is a pretty steady number, and it's a pretty steady outlook that gives me a slight amount of of comfort. It is not going to be an easy trading environment in South Africa. We all know that. We all know that it's a much different story here with rollouts of vaccines, with people, you know, being under quite a lot of pressure with growth, with jobless rates being quite high in South Africa. So if we don't see the return of foreign travelers, it will be very worrying for all these companies that's listed in the retail property space.
Yeah, I mean, that is their trick. And I mean, the V&A is going to, I imagine, remain under pressure probably another year before people are really coming back. I agree, that balance sheet looking really, really good. Loan to value down to about 40%, really strong. That capital raise, and as you say, the drip really worked well for them. Office, of course, still, and this is not just growth point, this is,
yes,
this is the office, you know, vacancies 19.5%, renewal rates at only 53%. Office is going to be another struggle, and another one probably for a number of years.
Absolutely. You know, it's not just the retail side. The office space is the other big area. I mean, and despite the fact that offices aren't being renewed and offices are standing empty, even the ones that are still being paid for, Growthpoint, as many of the other property companies in South Africa, have come to the party and have given massive reliefs to their tenants, not only on the retail space, but also on the office space. So that was another big hit to the income streams for these companies. And as you say, I don't think that's an area that's going to pick up very fast. But the fact remains that we do have an oversupply of very good, not only retail, but also office space in South Africa. And as soon as that's not absorbed by the market, and now there's been a structural change in the market, it's going to be very tough for these companies to leverage what they used to going forward.
Yeah, and as you said, there's an oversupply. I mean, I remember driving through Sandton. It was a construction lot for, I don't know, forever and a day. So we'll leave that there. Mia Kruger, Director, Kruger International, appreciate the early morning. Our poll, chatting there with Mia Kruger from Kruger International around the Growthpoint update, with some good news, lower debt, bad news, office vacancies remaining high. This really is our bluest chip REIT in South Africa. Do you hold it? Yes? No? Perhaps you're watching to see what will happen? You can vote and have your comment on our LinkedIn, Twitter and Facebook profiles.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Justin Smith. He's head of manufacturing sector, Absa Retail and Business Bank. Justin, appreciate the early morning time. The Absa Manufacturing Survey came out. This is Q2 2021. Actually seeing rising confidence amongst manufacturers. And you know, I looked at that and I thought, weird, but actually a base effect. But broadly, business confidence was at highest level since 2012. Is this base effect, or is there, you know, perhaps the announcement from the president around the 100 megawatts, mining sector doing well? Is there real confidence sort of starting to bubble up?
Yeah, Simon. So definitely there is some base effects, because when we ask manufacturers about their confidence, we do look at, you know, versus 12 months ago. Mm-hmm. So quite clearly there is that. But what we've got to remember is that some of the components in this that we look at, so we dive into the deep detail. And for the first time since 2014, the majority of respondents saying sales volumes are increasing. And why that's important is then if we look at their forward-looking expectations for the next 12 months as well, they're looking confident about the next 12 months of orders and sales. So there's that. I think they're seeing stronger selling price increases, which is surprising, especially on the export side when the rand's improved over that time. So yeah, some of those, so definite base effects, but I think there's a lot of trend points there that are really positive. The other side is that this is the highest confidence we've seen since 2012. We also have all but one of the subsectors increasing in confidence. And that one that came down was textiles, which is actually at a high level and seeing a lot of good growth. So, yeah, base effects, but I think there's a lot to be positive about.
You know, manufacturing, I mean, the question was always, you know, what do we, manufacturing used to be very much, and we're going back to what, 80s and stuff, it was focused around mining predominantly and the like. Is it still very much driven mining? Because obviously that's a space that's doing well with commodity prices.
So I think we see the benefits of mining increase, But when you look at where the main drivers of the sector are, so a big subsector is metals and non-ferrous metals. So obviously there's a link there. But also when we go into the food and beverage sector, that's been a shining star over, you know, we've seen what's happened in the agricultural industry, and therefore agro-processing has kind of risen with that. So those are two very big ones. And then we've got the automotive. We all know the success is there. We know that there's increasing output coming from that sector. We know the problems with semiconductors, but it's not yet causing major problems for the local industry. So those are three of the big players. And then the chemicals, the obvious one, is the fourth.
Automotive is always the one I forget. And actually, that's slack of me, because we actually have a fairly large automotive. You mentioned, you know, some chip shortages. I mean, is there issues perhaps with supply chains, particularly if you're importing raw materials? I mean, certainly we've seen challenges in a number of industries. Is that filtering through?
Yes, so Simon, I think we've mentioned this in the last three surveys, that this has been something that's bubbling under and it just doesn't get out of the system. And so this is definitely a hangover from the global supply chain shocks. Mm-hmm. We also are seeing a quicker than expected recovery globally. So just interestingly, global demand is at a record high, and global PMIs are just at record highs. So purchasing manager index, and that measures the output of the industry. So, you know, we're seeing a bit of a double whammy, where you have still the supply chain issues and then good recovery globally. So the good news is that while steel probably led us into the shortage in locally, we are seeing that issue make its way out of the system. But we've seen plastics, food and beverage packaging manufacturers, as an example, where there's slight shortages in those plastic inputs. Yeah. So we've seen it across the board. And then this quarter, you know, it's moved into all subsectors, essentially, this raw material shortage. But the positive is that the raw materials versus forward-looking demand is at its lowest level ever. So the positive in that meaning, you know, there's forward-looking demand that these manufacturers are trying to produce for. So we just hope that, you know, there's no major shocks again, and that they can continue to just build up the raw materials as they have been over the last two quarters, rather than losing out on sales.
Gotcha. Every time we talk, one of the dark spots has been Eskom, has been security of power, has been cost of power. The announcement by the president, which hasn't yet been gazetted, around 100 megawatts. I mean, I hate the cliched phrase, but this must be game changer. Even if the manufacturer isn't going to produce their own power, more power in the grid means probably less load shedding. Maybe the office park or the industrial park they're at is going to put their own capacity in. This takes a significant burden off their shoulders, albeit it's going to take a couple of years to really filter through.
Yes, I mean, so I think what we're looking for is just to get this regulatory act gazetted and see that this is finalized. And that could come relatively quickly. I think the good news is we know a few manufacturers, a few farmers, a few, you know, business people that have 1 megawatt installations that could move those up to 3 megawatts immediately. And a 3 megawatt installation for them would take a couple months. So you put enough of those on the grid, it does make an impact. I think that's the one side. The other is this positive momentum in the regulation and the signal it gives, you know, what's going to happen with the ports, because we know the issues there with, you know, the capacity, the railway lines that we can start moving some of these goods. So the direction of the change is positive. And we think, you know, there's a lot that private sector can do. And then some of these smaller IPPs, independent power producers, will start, you know, building bigger plants and selling to those corporates. So, yeah, all positive, and we're happy for the businesses that now can start looking at bigger installations.
Yeah, of course, that's the news, that the ports will be sort of separated out of Transnet and made a subsidiary. We'll leave it there. Justin Smith, Head Manufacturing Sector at Absa Retail and Business Bank, appreciate the early morning.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Ken Collett. He is SA Murder Mysteries. They send out a weekly email, and I was on one of their mysteries a couple of years ago for a birthday event. Their one was, why is it time for South Africans to take over the world? And he said, if you want to know more about the thoughts, to drop him a mail. I did. I got him on the line. Ken, appreciate the time today. I suppose this all kicks back to a fairly large degree, I mean, COVID. I mean, it really has, you make the comment that when you do something long enough, it forms that habit. And you know, we're 15 months in, we have formed those habits, particularly around remote.
Yes, that's right, Simon. I think so. Thanks for having me. Hi to the listeners. And I hope we can convince some South Africans that now's a really good time to take on the world. I think it'll be good for South Africans and the economy in general. I think that, you know, in the beginning with COVID, when we had this lockdown, you know, if it's a short lockdown, people will go back to the way they were before.
Yeah.
I think change is difficult. It's difficult to get people to change behaviors, but duration matters. You know, it's a kind of extension on the 21 days to make or break a habit. Mm. I don't think it's 21 days, but if it's gone 15 months, those temporary behaviors, people are now accustomed to it, and they've discovered some benefits around these things that are cool. I can work from home. I can see my kids. I don't have to sit in the traffic. And some of, and these things become permanent. And I think when there's a permanent change in social norms, you create opportunity. There's going to be winners and losers. And I think that there's some opportunities for South Africans specifically. I think there's, you know, maybe three obvious ones. We're on the same start line as people in the rest of the world with us. We have a currency advantage, and we have some access to very large markets that we didn't previously have access to. So I think these are like three really cool opportunities for us.
Yeah, and that is important. I mean, it's you say we've discovered things. I mean, I know corporates that, you know, they would never do remote work. It was just not going to happen. 15 months in, they're like, well, you know, this actually works quite well. We have discovered things. And I like your point. We can leverage. And you know, one of them is their currency. If I'm selling a service, and we're talking here probably more service than product. If I'm selling a service into the US or even into Europe, you know, they're paying euros, they're paying dollars, I'm earning ZAR, I can make it a bit cheaper. And for me, I actually benefit because of that currency differential.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I mean, I think a cool example for this is if an American tourist comes here and then they rave to their mates about how cheap the wine and the burgers are, you know, because they're earning in dollars and their expenses are in rands. And South Africans now have an opportunity to earn in dollars and have expenses in rands.
Yeah.
And that means that you can be the American tourist and the wine is cheap. You can sell services into LA. And it is cheaper for you to sell those services there than for the company based in LA. Like for the first time in the world, it sucks to be the guys based in LA. It's amazing. Like a great, you know, it's great for South Africans.
And we've, you know, this can be, as I said, we're talking services and, you know, in the note you sent me, you talked around accounting and the like. We don't have to be doing IRS, you know, tax submissions in the US, which is an area we're not skilled in. We can do kind of the bookkeeping and the like. We can go and do some back end stuff. And again, you know, it might not pay well in dollars, but put that in rands, and as you say, it pays for one.
It's crazy. That's actually an example that came from a friend of mine who runs an accounting firm here, and he's hiring bookkeepers from the Philippines to join the South African team, you know, because a debit is a debit and a credit's a credit, and you can have skills in the local country on the, you know, tax stuff, but, you know, some of these skills, you know, they're universal, you know. So even for things that are previously inconceivable or where you have these jurisdiction problems, like with accounting, you know, you can still leverage this in this way, you know. Even easier if you're in, you know, a marketing or strategy consulting or, you know, virtual team building, but, you know, like they aren't law requirements there. But I think even when you have that, you can still do this. And that's why I put in that example, is because it's one that, you know, with the accounting firms that people would have said, yeah, but you need to have local knowledge. You can hire that local knowledge in another geography, you know, like you can do that.
Yeah, you absolutely can. And you can get that sort of the reverse benefit going back. I suppose in a sense, I mean, you know, businesses and I imagine yours. I mean, you know, when I did a murder mystery, it's a physical event. During the hard lockdown, those certainly weren't happening. Now probably, but smaller groups and the like. It really is a case of stepping back and having a look at what things look like 15 months into a pandemic and saying, what do I like? What do I want to keep? And how do I keep that?
Sure, yeah. I don't want to talk a lot about murder mysteries, but I mean, you know, with a, if we take what we do, the things that have changed, you know, that we didn't expect and that maybe companies didn't expect is you have, a team in Joburg and a team in Cape Town and a team in Mauritius, and they can all participate in the same event, whether that's a murder mystery or something else. Mm-hmm. And that just wasn't something that the guys had, it just wasn't possible before to connect in this way. Yeah. It wasn't in the social consciousness, you know. It was technologically possible. You made that point earlier on the call around corporates and working remotely and, like, you know, cloud-based accounting's been around forever and Skype's been around forever. You could have previously, like, done these things, but there wasn't a it wasn't a social norm. There wasn't, like, consumer desire for it. And that's what's changed. And then there are these other benefits. We're like, oh, actually, these teams can connect. Actually, we can hire the best talent no matter where they are in the world or the country, you know. And so those 15 months in, people are now recognizing those benefits. And then those things are going to stay. In some spaces, it's actually better. You know, you're talking about the guys getting together in person. Mm. They choose sometimes to do these remote events because they can have guys, they can have the Mauritius team join.
Yeah.
And it's just not possible, you know, to do it in person. It's better to do it remote.
And the flip is, if you are the best talent, you can now live in a Karoo town and virtual into everything. We'll leave it then. Can
it's
call
true.
It SA Murder Mysteries. Really appreciate your time. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, we were asking you about CEO Second Acts, chatting about Long for Life, Brian Joffe with Wayne McCurry. We asked, do they disappoint always, or is there potential? Pretty much across our social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, 53% saying always disappoints. About 47 saying there's potential. A couple of folks mentioned Mark Lamberti. He started Massmart and went on to Imperial. He didn't start Imperial. I was looking for CEOs who started too. Folks then said Elon Musk, but he didn't find Tesla. He also didn't find PayPal. He owned a company called XCOM that was taken over by PayPal. So really only he founded SpaceX and I suppose the Boring Company. Remember, we're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m., podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kodora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
Listen to the live stream of MoneyWeb Now at the same time every weekday. For more business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.